that brings you tidbits from all aspects of the soccer world. Sometimes serious, sometimes zany, always opinionated. Now, here are your hosts, Chad Smith and Corey Chatelaine.
This is the 2.5 Yanks podcast. I am your host, Chad Smith. Greetings to you wherever you may be, and I am joined this week, fresh off his Portland vacation, by my co-host, Mr. Corey Chatelaine.
Yeah, I'm off the transfer list, baby. So all my demise has been greatly exaggerated, whatever. So, back in the starting lineup.
That's right. He was dropped for missing training last week.
Yeah.
And fined as well. So that big chunk out of your non-existent TDY paycheck, that's what that is.
Yeah, it was docked all 12 cents plus fines.
So welcome to the show, folks.
But hey, the concert was worth it, so.
All right, and we'll get into more of that throughout the show, maybe, perhaps. I don't know. We'll see how themes meander, as we always do. But let's just go through the rundown here. Here is what in store today, boys and girls. We are going to go through some relegation postmortem and analyzing why are Cardiff and Fulham going down. Next, we will talk about Sunderland's improbable escape for now. Next on the list would be the Louis van Gaal to Manchester United rumors. Is this really going to happen? And then last, we will talk about the last remaining spot in next year's Premier League. The championship playoffs are set, so we will talk about which four teams still have hope in playing in the Premiership next season. So, are you ready to go, non-transfer listed Corey?
Yep.
Alrighty. All right, now you can speak. Sorry, the crowd went wild.
Oh, yeah, no, just saying, metal horns. Let's go.
All right. So, with the results that happened this weekend, and Cardiff and Fulham both dropped their games, which saw them drop like a rock to the bottom of the table, and their fates have been sealed. It is no more mathematically possible than for them to stay up, and they have been relegated, or as they like to say in the, what was that, the most extreme challenge, don't get relegated!
Yes, Baba Ganoush has got some new buddies. He's always getting eliminated.
Yeah, so let's talk about Cardiff and Fulham, and let's kind of give a postmortem on why are the big reasons they got relegated, and we'll start with Cardiff because they are on the bottom of the table, and I have their roster pulled up here. And their stats, for that matter. And the number one thing that jumps out to me when I look at their stats for the year is their just complete lack of goal scoring. They only had 5 different players score multiple goals. And 2 of those players were center backs. And Stephen Cocker, and then this guy, I don't even remember him playing much, this Kala.
Yeah, well, he was one of the January guys that came in, so okay. his two goals have been, like, in the last month, I think.
So if he was with them the full year, he'd probably be their leading scorer.
Yeah. Or he would have been found out early, and Cardiff still would have been pants.
Oh, that's perhaps true. So Cardiff, they did lose their match 3-0 to Newcastle United, which is saying a lot, given the situation that they're in. So what are your viewpoints with Cardiff? Other than a lack of scoring, which is, obviously you got to score goals to win games. Their leading scorer was Jordan Much, who had 7 goals in 25 appearances.
Yeah, which unfortunately, unlike his phonetic-sounding name, Cardiff needed much more scoring than Much provided. Yeah, the short answer is Cardiff's fate was sealed, in my opinion, when Vincent Tan started going all Jerry Jones in the fall, and he started having pretty public fallouts with Malky Mackay. And like I said, I think we even talked about it on one of the podcasts earlier this year, or late last year, that. Just whenever you have those problems off the field, and you're already playing poorly, that's usually a really good sign that things aren't going to get better. And then even bringing in Ole Gunnar Solskjaer and a couple of or several new signings in January, it just all had the makings of just trying to patch an iceberg-sized hole in the Titanic, with some bubble gum or something.
Some big league chew.
Yes, exactly.
Well,
The non-flavored kind too, so it wouldn't even, couldn't even get the flavor, couldn't even get the flavor. So yeah, that's my take on Cardiff. It's just that their fate was sealed when all that malarkey off the field started to spill over into the dressing room.
and that could be very well the case. So we talked about this. So we went from Vincent Tan's All-Star 11 to Vincent Tan's, what do we call them, mediocre 11.
Yeah, well, I think they have to be the downgraded from dragons to like Worms or whatever those what's the wyvern or whatever they're called, those shoot, I forget the mythological creature, but they're not quite dragons. So anyway, so yeah, so just yes, agree that now that they have to go back to the championship, they're now Vincent Tan's mediocre Wyvern 11 or something.
Or maybe Vincent Tan's relegated Dragon Bird 11.
Yes, which I thought it was pretty funny. Somebody or several people tweeted pictures of the standings where Cardiff, where they always have it highlighted in red with the teams that are relegated, with the caption, "Vincent Tan finally got his wish of making Cardiff red."
Oh, jeez, yeah. I saw that on Twitter as well.
Wah wah.
All right, so just for some statistics to just get in your head and just to think about this. This is quite interesting. Cardiff, in their 37 matches so far, have only scored 31 goals. And that's not going to cut it, obviously. But they also gave up 72 goals in that time and have a negative 41 goal difference.
Yeah, and I don't have the numbers behind it, but pretty much ever since Malky Mackay was fired, they've pretty much been pants. I mean, they've been pretty dreadful.
That's true. And then part of it is, they do play a somewhat entertaining brand of football. They don't just go route one. And it seems to me that they had the talent to be able to score a lot of goals in the championship. But because of the managerial trouble, the ownership trouble, the backroom trouble, that talent wasn't able to see it through in the Premier League.
Yeah, and kind of like what you were alluding to before we came on the air is that it's one thing to do that at the championship level, and then try to emulate that at the premiership level or any top level league. You then need, either one of two things: better quality players to then take that game up another level, or kind of like when Reading came up several years ago for the first time when they had Bobby Convey and Stephen Sidwell and James Harper and those guys, they have to be playing together for several years to kind of like Southampton did when they came up. A lot of those guys that came up, Lambert, Lallana, etc., they had been playing together for 3 or 4 or 5 years. They hadn't kind of been cobbled together like sometimes championship squads are, to where, like I said, that's why you see people kind of pop in and out of the Premiership and the Championship, is that, sometimes you put together a squad, they play well, they come up a level, and then, the tactics change. People are scrutinized a little more, and they're, for the lack of a better term, teams are found out easier once you make that step up.
So, since this is a post-mortem, if you and I were the EPL coroners, I think our cause of death would have to be crazy ass owner.
Yes, the over tanning, badum-cha.
Over tanning, I like that.
Yeah.
Too much exposure to the sun,
Yes.
resulting in over tanning.
Yes.
That's really good.
Yes, dehydration from over tanning, or
Okay.
yeah.
All right, let's move over to our next victim, and that would be Fulham, a team who, or a club, sorry, who went through three managers this year. So they had the same type of problems Cardiff did, but different. I don't think this is an ownership issue. I think this is a talent issue. Because Martin Jol is a solid manager. Muhlenstein came in. He's pretty well thought of as a coach anyway, maybe not as a manager. But, you know, he knows what he's doing. He knows the game. And then they brought in the, you know, the relegation specialist in McGath. And he couldn't get it done. And I think all three managers have the same problem. Fulham just doesn't have the players that are required to succeed in their premiership. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, well, they had a pretty good, well, at least on paper, or, you know, name recognition. They had a pretty good defense with Stecklenburg, Haitenga, Hangelin, Aaron Hughes. But a lot of those guys are kind of getting up in age, and, you know, the level of talent in the Premiership now is that you basically can't just sit back and defend, you know, unless you have uber talent like, you know, Chelsea. So a lot of times, even though you might have pretty good defenders per se, if those guys are kind of left one on one, or if the midfield doesn't help out, you know, they're eventually going to get broken down because, like I said, the talent in the Premiership is just, or in a league like the Premiership, it's just too much over the course of a season. Now, kind of to your point about they just didn't lack the talent. I mean, like I said, when you look at their roster, and, you know, I mean, when arguably the best player is kind of a Wolfsburg cast off in Ashkan Dejaga, or Dejaga, however you say his name, and then a guy who's kind of getting up in age a little, and kind of a poor man's Lampard and Steve Sidwell, you know, when those guys are arguably two of your best players, then, you know, it's just a recipe for disaster. And as much as the English media loves him some Scotty Parker, you know, you can reiterate this yourself, being a Spurs fan. Scott Parker, you know, lost several steps ever since he had that Achilles injury a couple years ago. And it's basically kind of at this point, a championship-level player playing in the Premier League because he's Scott Parker, and he's got a little bit of name recognition. So that's my take on Fulham, is that while they had decent names on paper, they were never really a good team this year, and they just lacked a true firepower going forward. And even with, you know, Dempsey coming in for a cameo in his loan, you know, he could never really get going either. So that's my take on them.
Okay, so if you were the EPL corner and you had to issue a cause of death for Fulham, what would that be?
I can't think of the medical term at the moment, but just basically some form of, like, talent stagnation or whatever the medical term of getting passed by is, or
it doesn't have to be medical. I mean, good Lord.
Well, I'm a coroner. Okay, well, I think their talent level stagnated and they got passed by other clubs.
All right. Fair enough. Talent, I don't know. I can't think of anything either. Sorry.
Well, and then they signed Mitroglou and he plays all of three games because he gets hurt as soon as he comes in. So that's another reason too, but yeah.
So just to compare to Cardiff, Fulham actually scored 38 goals, which is 7 more than Cardiff. But they gave up 83, which is 9 more than Cardiff did. And they even had a worse goal difference, the worst goal difference in the Premier League, negative 45.
Yeah, and like I said, you look at the roster. Now, granted, a lot of these guys missed a lot of time this year because of injury. But, you know, they got Johnny Haitenga, Brede Hangelin, where'd he go? That Amor Bieto, whatever his name was, came in, did pretty well. Aaron Hughes, is pretty good. Senderos, you know, even though he couldn't cut the grade at Arsenal, you know, for a mid-table club, well, what was formerly a mid-table club like Fulham, you would think he would be pretty good. So, like I said, they had fairly decent names on paper, just for whatever reason, like sometimes happens with these mid-table clubs. They kind of come in, you know, they kind of have a golden era for about 8 to 10 years, and then, you know, because of their stature, their finances off the field, because we also have to remember that Fulham got sold a couple years ago too, if I remember correctly. So again, maybe it's one of those, you know, maybe the finances off the field and the management behind the scenes is a little different, and you know, they, for whatever reason, they couldn't just cobble together the talent, or you know, the talent that they did kind of cobble together, they just couldn't make it work.
Then, no, that's a good point. They were sold last summer to Shad Khan.
Okay, well, remember it was Khan, but yeah, I couldn't remember if it was this summer or this past summer or the summer before. So,
So that could be lead, you know, a change in ownership, a change in how processes are done, and for whatever reason, they weren't able to have a normal transfer window to get that talent.
Yeah, and that's one of the.
That's a good point.
Yeah, and that's one of the subtle points that a lot of people in the States don't realize is because clubs are structured as clubs and not franchises, and especially for clubs that traditionally are kind of lower league clubs like Fulham, sometimes those changes in management or leadership have a much bigger knock-on effect, either positively or negatively, than they do over here in American leagues where teams are franchises and they're not really going anywhere other than maybe just moving cities.
That's right. So just quick question, and I've been wanting to talk about this for a while, and maybe we could get into it later in the summer when there's time. But I just wanted to wait until it was official so I didn't get, you know, Fulham fans yelling and screaming at us, "Hey, you're telling us our team is down," when they still could mathematically make it.
Which club they're jumping to?
No.
Okay.
But, well, maybe yes, but do you think Fulham, given the fact that they've had American players on their squad before, mainly Dempsey and McBride, so they've built up a following here in the United States. Do you think now that they've been relegated, do you think that they will be able to keep up their presence in the United States?
Well, yeah, what's funny you mentioned that, because I posed the same question on Twitter on Saturday that, you know, I jokingly said how many American Fulham fans are looking for a new club to support after they're relegated, because yeah, it'll be interesting to see how many of the American fans, because you know, if you listen to certain podcasts, Fulham has a much bigger presence in the U.S. than even I realized. And like you said, I have to put that down to having, excuse me, Dempsey and McBride playing for him. But yeah, the fact that championship matches aren't shown that much over here, and if you do, you generally have to go the IRIT pay route. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see how many American fans of Fulham, you know, maybe they're sporting Brighton shirts next year, or Leicester shirts, or somebody, you know, who knows.
Well, there's always room at Chelsea. They'll accept anybody, so.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
That's my advice.
Well, that would be the logical choice for a lot of bandwagon types, especially if you're the type that's going to jump ship from a club, you know.
All right, so please, if you dislike what we say, please get in touch with us. That'd be at @2daftyanks on Twitter.
Yeah, and if, you know, well, yeah. I'll hold my tongue for once.
All right. Okay, let's move on here to Sunderland. And a couple of weeks ago, we were burying Sunderland, just like with Cardiff and Fulham. We thought that they would share the same fate. But as of right now, they've had an improbable escape with a string of results against some pretty good clubs. Obviously, the draw, 2-2 draw against Manchester City got them a point. Then they beat Chelsea 2-1. Then they beat relegated Cardiff 4-0. And now, this past weekend, they get their first win at Old Trafford since, I think, 1968.
Oh, it was glorious.
What I saw. So Sunderland beats Manchester United, or Giggsy United, or Sleep With Your Brother's Wife United.
Yeah, Class of 92 United.
Yeah, and so Sunderland, when you look at the table right now, they have a game in hand, and they will be playing midweek. So that could change things, but they're 2 points ahead of Norwich right now. So if they can get any type of points if they could just get a point in their game against West Brom, given their goal difference, they're pretty much going to clinch survival unless, you know, Norwich could beat Arsenal something like 25-0, which is what it'd take. Sunderland's at negative 19, and Norwich is at negative 32. So Sunderland with a point against West Brom, who's only a point ahead of them in the standings. So that's going to be a key game in this matchup. But what do you think with Sunderland? Why do you think all of a sudden they're starting to get results?
Well, the joke reason is, like one of our many running jokes is, I'll just say, because Sunderland ain't nothing to mess with. But the real reason is, one, you touched on it, or you touched on part of the point during your stats rundown there, is that their goal difference is only minus 19. So to me, that kind of says right there that they're kind of maybe underachieving all year, which I'll then dovetail into my point, or my other point, is that I think Sunderland was a much better team than the you know, even though the table doesn't lie, talent-wise, Sunderland is a much better team than their record, at least in my opinion, they're a much better team than their record, would maybe show. So I think part of that was down to the disastrous start that was, you know, basically the circus that was Paulo Di Canio. And even though his nuttiness and his brash style is basically what saved them last year from avoiding relegation, that kind of then kind of spilled over into the new season, led to the disastrous start that they had. And, you know, once you, like I said, in this day and age, once you have a disastrous start like that in any top league, you know, you're basically just chasing it from then on out. And especially when you're in a relegation spot come Christmas time, you know, you definitely have a huge task ahead of you, because if Sunderland ends up staying up, what is it, they'll be only the second team ever in the Premier League era that was, bottom of the table at Christmas and then in, you know, ended up surviving. So, like I said, I think...
I know that.
Yeah, I forget the other team, but yeah, they'll be only the second team in the, whatever it is, the 22 years of the Premier League that was bottom at Christmas that will then avoid relegation. But yeah, so that, I think a lot of it had to do with just, like I said, the circus that was Di Canio led to the bad start, even though kind of like Cardiff or Fulham, they brought in some players that had some talent but weren't able to, or, you know, took them a pretty good while to kind of figure out who the best 11 was. And then, you know, once they kind of settled on a lineup, even though Fletcher got injured recently, you know, that's basically when they started to play a lot better. Because I think, I don't know if it was both of us, but I know I certainly had them early in the year originally predicted the challenge for, or, you know, an outside shot to challenge at a Europa League spot. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, if Josie wouldn't have gone goal dry, you know, maybe they wouldn't have been fighting relegation all year long. So who knows?
Mm-hmm. And now that you mention it, I do remember you saying that. And Sunderland was one of my teams who I thought would improve on their season last year. I think they have a fair amount of a talent, not a lot of, you know, top drawer talent, but as a team, they're pretty solid all around. And I thought I didn't think they would challenge for a place in Europe, but I thought that they would have a good run and maybe, you know, the Carling Cup, maybe reach a final there, maybe have a good long run in the FA Cup as well. So our predictions kind of backfired.
Well, yeah, and again, like I said, you kind of look at their lineup and, you know, they got some Man U cast-offs, an Arsenal cast-off, you know, a couple of guys that were pretty good at Birmingham, you know, a Man City cast-off. So like I said, they kind of had the makings of what potentially could have been a pretty decent team, but, you know, for whatever reason, it just took them a while to get going. And like I said, I put that partly down to the Di Canio circus and partly down to, you know, sometimes even though those guys may, you know, have individual talent, it takes a while to get that talent to play well as a team. And I'm hoping that plane that just buzzed my house wasn't heard on the on the telecast here.
Oh, I heard it.
Okay, yeah. That's...
We'll see if it's in the final audio production when we process this sucker. But let's hope that wasn't, you know, the NSA checking in on you.
Yeah, or it's Mourinho coming close to give me the stink eye. Or some disgruntled Chelsea fan. Or a TDY fan with another, with flying a Chatelaine out banner.
Yeah. So, now the big reason Sunderland's been winning these games is because of the reemergence of a player that they had on loan, and that would be the young striker Connor Wickham, who, remember, when he was available when playing in the championship, and I forget for who already. Was he at Brighton?
No, I believe it was Ipswich.
Ipswich, yes, that is right. And so he was, you know, the newspapers had him linked to all the top clubs in the league. Everybody, you know, Tottenham, Chelsea, Man U, everybody was supposedly after him.
He was linked with us.
Arsenal, yeah. Everybody at one point in time was linked to this kid. And inexplicably, he ended up at Sunderland. And everybody was like, huh? But now he's here. He's got 5 goals in 8 matches now. So do you think this is something... Is he a flash in the pan? Or is he actually have the talent to be able to produce from here on out?
Well, he's definitely got talent. It's just, I don't know if this was I don't know if this was on the NBC broadcast or if it was on one of the English feeds I was watching yesterday morning, but they relayed some story that Connor Wickham is apparently one of those guys that like a lot of young athletes, when they make it into a big time club or in a big time league, they think they've made it. And they kind of coast, and that, like I said, they were relaying the story that apparently Connor Wickham was one of those guys who'd show up to training, and he was more eager to talk about his new car and his new tattoos or whatever than actually training. So now, Grant, okay, you know, obviously, with that said, that's a lot of hearsay. But yeah, so maybe that's one of those things that, when he got shipped out on loan, maybe that was kind of a message of saying, you know, hey, even though you're an EPL, or, you know, even though you're on an EPL team, you know, you need to get your act together, and we'll, you know, if not, you'll be back in the Premiership or whatever, or I'm sorry, the Championship, because yeah, ever since he's come back on his loan, he's been arguably one of the hottest strikers in the league.
Yeah, and that's something that you see often. It's not just isolated to him. These players, they get to the club, they think they made it, and then they don't work as hard and they don't develop as players. But if you look at
David
any top
Bentley.
Player, you have to work hard to be able to make it.
Yeah, and it's and I think because he was loaned back to a championship side, I think that was part of that message, is that because he's got, you know, obviously he's got the talent to play at this level. But like I said, I think the fact that he was loaned to a championship side, that was basically telling him, you need to get your act together, because we could have loaned you to another EPL side, but, you know, we're going to loan you to a now, granted, a player's got to agree to that loan as well, but like I said, after hearing that story, that's kind of what leads me to believe that that's what a championship side had to do with that loan, was that it was kind of one of those, you know, like a watershed moment of, you know, do you want to be average and make money, or do you want to, you know, get your act together and, you know, come good on your talent?
Yeah, so he'll be somebody to worth monitoring, and if he does well, you know, in the fall of next year, it wouldn't surprise me to see him linked again with bigger clubs come the winter transfer window.
Well, see, you just took the words right out of my mouth, because I was just about to say that if he puts it together, he's exactly the kind of player that, you know, somebody like a mid-table type of manager, David Moyes, Sam Allardyce, etc., would end up going after, you know, at whatever club they'll end up at.
Mm-hmm. All right, so there is what's going on at the bottom of the table.
Or, you know, maybe a replacement for Ricky Lambert or something.
Uh-huh, and some relegation analysis. So probably not too many podcasts going to be talking relegation. So if you're listening to this, we thank you. But I think it's interesting. It's more interesting than the top of the table.
That's yeah, it's, sure, it's what makes the European League so interesting to me.
This is, you know, it's more than a game. I mean, this is people's livelihoods. I mean, you get down, that club may never come up again. It's possible. We've seen it. Your wages go down. Most of these players have, you know, the relegation wage contract clauses. So, I mean, this is a big impact on a lot of people's lives.
Yeah, because the you may never come back. The people should Google Bradford Park Avenue. They were a top level or second division side, like in the early 1900s. Got relegated and I think eventually fell out of the league in the 40s. The league meaning the professional leagues, and they're now toiling around like in the 6th, 7th, 8th divisions of England. But like I said, they were originally a top or second division side. So like I said, to me, that's one of the fascinating things about European leagues and the relegation concept in general is that, like you said, that some of these people really are fighting for the lives of their clubs or that, you know, the professionalism of their club, and that if you drop out, you may never come back.
Mm-hmm. And I can't remember, I should have wrote this down, but it's not Portsmouth or anyone like that, but somebody who has been in the Football League for like 80 or 90 years is out now.
It was Bristol Rovers, my
that's
beloved
it?
Bristolona,
oh,
yeah.
That's it, Bristol Rovers, that's it. Bristol Rovers yeah. are out of the Football League.
94 years.
94 years in the Football League and now gone.
Yep, down into the conference, into the semi-pro level.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was part of what I was following on Saturday morning because, you know, ever since I've managed them in Football Manager 10, you know, I follow them on Twitter now. So, and, you know, I don't support them or anything, but, you know, I kind of – they're one of the several other clubs that I keep track of these days just for shits and giggles. But, yeah, they got relegated, lost to Wycombe Wanderers, and, yeah, they're out of the professional leagues for the first time in almost a century.
So there we go. So this stuff matters. All right. We spent far too long on this, so we will have to buzz through our last two topics.
Yeah, sorry. So one quick thing. I'm glad you reminded me. I'm glad you reminded me about that. I meant to say tip your 40s for Bristol Rovers.
Oh, boy. All right. I'm going to recycle this joke.
Sure.
Now, we just talked about the bottom of the table. We're not going to talk about the top of the table because there's too many. It's too fluid right now. We'll talk about it next week. So let's go to that mid-table side that everybody loves, Manchester United.
Yeah.
And
Schadenfreude, man, yes, just keep dishing it up.
And let's talk about these rumors on their next manager. And I still am not convinced this is going to happen. Now everybody is reporting it, so you would have to think it's true. You wouldn't think so many journalists would be reporting this if it wasn't true. But everybody knows the best kept or the worst kept secret in the world is the Netherlands national team manager who will be taking charge of them in the World Cup this summer in Brazil. Louis van Gaal is expected to be announced the new Manchester United manager sometime this week. But I'm still not convinced this is going to happen, Corey, because this would be a big departure from what Manchester United has usually done. And now I know in the past couple of weeks we've talked about this, you know, ourselves, but Manchester United has never had really a non-British manager. They've had a couple managers from Ireland, but most of them have been British, you know, or Scottish, English. And so this would be the first time that they hire a manager from the continent. And not only is he from the continent, but to a lot of indications, he's a control freak and a complete nut job at times. So do you buy these Louis van Gaal rumors to Manchester United? And if you do, what type of changes are they going to have to make as a club to be able to accommodate his style?
Yeah, to sound a little wishy-washy, I both buy it and I don't. I buy it in the sense that I think the hierarchy at Man U is so disappointed in how the Moyes thing turned out that they need to do something that's going to make a splash, that's going to kind of get the reputation back, or you know, to to take the tarnish off the reputation. So I do kind of buy it in the sense that I do think they're going after a name this time, or, you know, not that Moyes wasn't unknown, but that, you know, a bigger name on the world stage, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. So I buy it in that sense. I don't buy it in the sense that, like a lot of British clubs, they're pretty staunch in their traditions and their they're very slow to certain types of changes. So I don't think if they go after Van Gaal, you say Van Gaal, I say Van Gaal.
Did I say Van Gaal? I meant Van Gaal.
Yeah, it was, yeah.
Okay, sorry. That was the mint julep talking.
Oh, yeah, well, like I said, it just makes a joke of you say Van Gaal and I say Van Halo. So anyway, so if they do go after Van Gaal, a lot of the hierarchy at Man U, because you have to remember Man U is a club that they like to they like their former players to come in, and, you know, even if they don't have official roles at the club, that they kind of have some sway, you know, maybe off the field, you know, Bobby Charlton, etc. And Van Gaal is the type that he's not going to put up with a lot of that stuff. So, you know, I could see him actually, you know, taking extreme measures of, like, actually banning certain players from the club if they want to talk about the club and they're not actually on the staff. So, like I said, if they hire Van Gaal, they're going to have to go through, they being the hierarchy and the backroom staff, they're going to have to go through major changes in operating style. So I personally think that Van Gaal, if he's hired, he's not going to last very long because, like I said, as traditional as Man U likes to operate, they're not going to put up with that for very long.
Mm-hmm. And there's going to have to be quite a bit of drastic changes in terms of the way they play on the field.
Well, yeah, because I can tell you right now, one of the first people that's probably going to be out that's going to tick a lot of people off, especially the ilk of Adrian Durham, is Michael Carrick. I kind of have players like Michael Carrick, I have a feeling that he's going to be one of the first out the door from Van Gaal.
Yeah, so, and, you know, there's a lot of people now that he's being linked, you know, they're being linked to all kinds of players, and there's, oh, man, Manchester United could bring in, you know, 7, 8, 9 new players. So I think if they bring in Van Gaal, you're going to have that backroom upheaval, which they've already had, because remember Moyes, the big gripe with Moyes is that he booted all of Ferguson's staff for the most part, brought in his own backroom. That rubbed people the wrong way. Van Gaal's going to want to do the same thing, and he's going to want to change out 7, 8, 9 players. So this is going to take time, and I don't think the Manchester United brass will have the patience to do so.
Well, yeah, because what you just said right there, the fact that it was somehow a surprise that a modern coach wasn't going to bring in his own personal staff, wasn't a possibility in the mindset of the Manchester, the board of directors. That, like I said, that shows you right there that the mindset has kind of fallen behind the times because they had Ferguson in charge for so long. Because, like I said, to me, that knowing how sports clubs and teams operated, that shouldn't have been a shock at all that Moyes was going to bring in his own staff.
They were shocked, I say.
Yeah, shocked. Shocked with an apostrophe, or with an exclamation point after it.
All right, let's wrap that up.
All right.
And let's get to our last topic here. So we talked about the teams going down in the Premier League, Cardiff and Fulham going down, and then I guess Sunderland and Norwich are the last two who could possibly go down. Right now, everybody else is safe. But let's talk about the last spot that is to battle for in terms of gaining promotion into the Premiership. So now remember, Leicester City are the champions of the championship with 102 points. They are going to come up in second place. Burnley clinched that a couple weeks back on 93 points, and they are coming up. But now the final spot will be determined by the ever-entertaining championship playoff. And
yeah. Settled in the most expensive game of football on the planet.
Yes, and the championship shaked out like this. They had their final day Saturday, which it was odd to me that they didn't do it today, considering there were only two Premier League matches. I think the championship deserves to have its own day. But
yeah,
that's a topic.
Always plays on Saturday, though.
For another time. That's true, I know, but why not push it back to let them get more of the spotlight on their final day? But anyway.
Because they're not. Yeah, the TV contracts and all that.
Yeah, whatever. Well, you know, TV, me.
Well, no, but what I'm saying is they're not beholden to a lot of the TV contracts like the EPL, because that's the reason why a lot of those matches get moved to Sunday now, and because of the Europa League, because traditionally England plays on Saturday. It's not like Italy where traditionally you play on Sunday.
Oh, I gotcha. I misunderstood what you said. Okay.
Yeah, that's what I meant. Sorry, it was the other way for the TV contracts.
Yes, let me carry on then. So yes. In third place is Derby County on 85 points, and they will play sixth place Brighton on 72 points in their two-legged tie. Then in the middle, you have fourth place Queen's Park Rangers on 80 points. Who will play Wigan, who is on 73 points. So you can see there's a little bit of a gap between third and fourth and fifth and sixth, a gap of 7 points. And those matches start this week, midweek. So on May 8th already, each team will play the first leg of those matches. So they will play each other in two legs, and then the winner of those matches will play in Wembley for a spot in the Premier League next season. And this has got a lot of implications because we've talked about this before. The championship has its own model of financial fair play, so to speak. And if Queen's Park Rangers does not get promoted, they are looking at like a multi-year transfer ban because they've spent way over the amount they're allowed.
Which means old Ari Redknapp is going to have to leave because Harry cannot buy players. I'm surprised he hasn't bought us at some point. He'd buy so many players.
If QPR get a transfer ban, they will get relegated. Maybe one or two levels. And that's how big of an impact this is going to have. So this really is life or death for QPR.
Well, yeah, because I was reading something that even with the transfer bans, they're not going to be able to keep all the they're not going to be able to keep certain players because they have some kind of salary thing that kicks in if they don't get promoted. They're basically going to be on the hook for all the salary that they're basically paying because they're projecting to get into the Premier League or something.
Are you kidding me? So they gave these players Premier League level wages even though they're not guaranteed Premier football?
Well, not all of them, but
some of them.
Some of them. That's what
Wow.
I don't know the extent of how true that is, but I was reading that a while back, and then I think one of the podcasts I listened to was talking about it at some point too. That if QPR doesn't get promoted, they're going to be in a world of hurt on multiple avenues.
Yeah, they'll be in trouble because obviously they'll have to sell the players that they can't afford, but they won't be able to replace them because they're under a transfer ban.
Yeah, I was reading that if they don't get promoted, Tony Fernandez, who also owns the Formula One team Lotus or whatever, or Caterham, whatever the hell they're called now, he's basically going to have to sell the club, is what I was reading.
Mm-hmm. And that's a big impact too, because they announced plans under his ownership to build a new stadium. So obviously that would be scrapped as well, more than likely, in that process.
Yeah, he was basically he and Briatore and those guys before were trying to turn QPR into kind of a new quasi-cosmopolitan London club based on the whole, London ideal. But it just hasn't worked because it's – I don't know if anybody's ever watched the QPR documentary that's on Netflix, which I can't remember the name right now, but it was when Briatore and a couple other Italian guys were running the club, and it's just it's been a circus ever since then.
I think that's called Four-Year Plan.
Yeah, that's what it. That's it. Good call.
That's the name. Yes, it's very good. I've watched it. So if you have Netflix and you follow football and you have not watched Four-Year Plan, it really is farcical. And the way that club was ran under those guys is crazy. You get full access into how they ran the club. It's nuts. I can't even describe how nuts it is.
Yeah, well, I'll just, and again, we're branching off here again, but just a real quick comment about that. It just shows me, or it, whenever I see something like that, it just baffles me how certain people like that, they make money, but they're, like I said, their logic and their so emotional that they make all these snap judgments that, like I said, some people must really just have a lot of luck, because like I said, the way they were running that club with Briatore and those guys, they're just, like I said, I was watching it and the whole time I'm thinking, I was like, how the hell did any of these guys ever make enough money to buy a football club? Because they're all lunatics.
Yeah, that's a good point, and maybe we'll get into that sometime in the summer.
Yeah,
we could kind of talk about this more, and there's other owners that are related to that issue, but let's talk about this playoff.
Vincent Tan.
Of the four clubs who are in the playoff, who do you think, just give your, do you have an idea of who you favor to gain promotion? I mean, it's a crapshoot, so who knows?
Yeah, I mean mainly Wigan, only because I've seen them play a few times. You know, obviously when they played Arsenal, when they played Manchester City, they've got a pretty good team. They have several guys that have EPL experience, although, to be fair, so does QPR. But, yeah, Wigan just got that. I mean, when they played, you know, obviously they beat City. They gave us all we wanted. So they obviously are pretty tactically sound. So, yeah, without knowing too much about Brighton and Derby, like I said, I would have to lean towards Wigan, mainly because I just think QPR is going to implode as well. So my pick would be Wigan
for QPR, half-assed.
Yeah.
Yeah, QPR is under a lot of pressure. So that's good. I think that will drain them, but it could also ignite them to do well. But I'm going to just privately hope for Brighton to get in to the Premier League just so we can use the cliché and play some Straight Cats music next year just to say there's a rumble in Brighton tonight.
Yeah, obligatory rumble in Brighton reference.
Yeah. Because I like me some rockabilly.
Yeah.
Man, I love me some rockabilly music.
Oh, by the same bad joke token, if Derby gets promoted, you know, every match they play is a Derby match.
Yeah.
Whoa, waka, waka, waka.
So, all right, so that's going to wrap up themes for today, but we have brought back a feature at Corey's request, and that is the outro music.
Yeah, did we hire Gojira and Mastodon?
No, we did not hire any of the bands that you saw in Portland on your mini vacation where you were transfer listed for a few days.
Yeah.
Actually, no, the outro music tonight, folks, is in honor of Cardiff and Fulham. They have been relegated, and they are losers. But, you know, we got somebody who's just a little more well-known than Mastodon to sing for us tonight, and that is one Mr. Frank Sinatra.
Not for long, no.
And he's singing, "Here's to the losers. God bless them all." So, sorry, Cardiff and Fulham, but listen to some Blue Eyes, and maybe you'll feel better.
Blue Eyes for Ballon d'Or.
So, all right, folks. So thank you for listening to the Two Deafness podcast. We will be back next week on Championship Sunday to talk about, you know, who finally went down in that final spot and who got the title, because right now it's a three-horse race possibility. So we'll see what happens. So thank you. And for Corey Chatelain, I am Chad Smith. Have a good one.
Happy belated St.
Tottering's
Day.
Here's to the losers. Bless them all. Here's to those who drink their dinners when that lady doesn't show. To the girls who wait for kisses underneath that mistletoe. To the lonely summer lovers when the leaves begin to fall. Here's to the losers, I bless them all.
Hey, Tom, Dick, and Harry, coming out of the rain. Those torches you carry must be drowned in champagne. Here's the last toast of the evening.